Good evening. Tonight we are going to talk about part two of our exploration into patience. First half of the month we talked about the nature of patience, so you know that it's a choice, that we somehow, that patience is actually that way that we can begin to see the second dart, that famous sutta where Buddha said there's first dart, that's just the nature of life, and the second dart is our mental torment over wishing that dart hadn't happened. And so patience is learning, is what gives us the ability to see that second dart. And then lastly, patience is that ability to hold and be with whatever difficulty is arising or whatever's happening, to see clearly what's going on. So tonight we are going to talk about how do you practice with this. And I wish I could say I have a long list of things that other teachers with way more experience and understanding than I have given me the information to share. But alas, that is not true. I cannot tell you how much searching I did on the internet and various things that I have to try to find some teacher out there that gave some description on how to practice with patience. But it's not out there. There's a lot of stuff out, commentaries and works on saying that we should be patient, but nothing on how to go about doing that. Sayadaw Teshaniya did say, and I see now why patience comes after energy. We spent all last month talking about Virya. Sayadaw Teshaniya said that the balance you have to find is the balance between relaxation and interest. Interest is using wisdom. There is a wisdom quality in interest. People usually try to find a balance between effort and relaxation by using more or less effort. But if there is interest, effort is already present. When the mind is interested in knowing something, there is already effort. But be patient with yourself. To have zero tension is not easy. So there's a conversation I'm hoping we can have tonight about this tension between our wanting to be patient and the relaxation, that balance between our relaxation and our interest or desire in being patient. And so I took this to the cushion and I just sat there thinking to myself, I could come up here and give you Tuareg's view on how to be patient, and some of what I'm going to talk about is how I worked with it over the years with Rodney. But the thing that kept coming up for me to explain this practicing with patience is something that Rodney always said in his intro class, which is, relax, observe, and allow. So anyone that's taken Rodney's intro class, he talks about this on and on and on. And it wasn't until this preparing for talking about practicing with patience that I realized that pretty much everything we try to do in learning mindfulness and everything we try to do in being mindful, the backdrop of that is patience. It's sort of this unspoken quality that we develop in order for us to have mindfulness, which is a little different than thinking, oh, I'm going to get mindful and then I'll be patient. It's more of the patience comes before the mindfulness, and the mindfulness, pretty easy riding once you begin to develop this quality of patience. So I thought if we used Rodney's relax, observe, and allow, we could begin to see how patience shows up in that tension when you're trying to relax, observe, and allow, how that comes in. One other thing I thought about was that it's kind of strange on all of the other paramis that my paramis, and I'm assuming even with Tim, we could find information on how to practice with it. You can find both the nature of it and how to practice with it. And patience is not really like that. And we talked last time about how patience is very different. It's not the same as the other paramis, the five that we've been sort of working with before. And I think it's because patience is the first parami that turns towards this kind of conscious intention towards something, it's asking something of us. And I think that's why there's nobody that can actually tell us what patience is, because each one of us in this room will have to find it for ourselves. That tension that Utejani is talking about, that balance between interest and relaxation, everybody individually has to find that. And you have to see it somehow out of your own efforts in practice, your own willingness to turn towards some difficult moment. So even though we're going to talk about some ways and some tools we could use to help us turn towards it, it really does boil down to that moment, whatever that moment looks like, you're turning. It's you and that moment that's going to help you see the arising of patience and the nature of it in your own practice. So the first thing, if we look at relax, I think that is relaxing our bodies. And I think I want to title this kind of like insert a pause, because it's almost impossible for people to tell me, when I think about how I used to be, for someone to come up to me and say, relax, Tori, you should relax more. And I would even say that the word relax was an adjective that people would use to describe me. Assertive, they would use that. Energized, they would use that. But not relaxed, because I always carried with me a tension, both in my body and even in the way I talk to people. There was this leaning into the conversation, and I still have that. So it's not like I'm saying, oh, back then I was like that, but now I'm all good. I'm not really saying that. What I'm saying is that before, I didn't even know that I had that tension in the body, that leaning into a conversation, that as part of it is being a lawyer, so you're just always in that persuasive, trying to, you know, move your way into something, convince the whole world that your side is right. That energy that you develop and you learn it, it just became a natural way that I would communicate, talk, and be with people. So I didn't really have this ability to notice that I was tense or find a way to be more relaxed. So basically, I had to learn how to be relaxed, how to relax a body that I didn't even know was tense. That's the paradox we have here sometimes, is that some of the things that we learn in practice, we can't start out knowing, oh, this is what I need to work on. So I didn't necessarily know that I needed to work on this tension that I had, because I didn't necessarily think this was tense. I was tense. But when I started practicing inside dialogue, it's the first time I begin to have the sense that I should pause a moment. Probably even, it may have even been around this time or before, Rodney suggested one time that we, you know, just take a moment and just relax, just don't do anything, just be with it. And I decided to practice by, before I would go in and negotiate my cases, I would be still, so I wouldn't say anything. When I first got to the courtroom, there's always a mad dash and everybody's trying to negotiate their cases, but I would not say anything. I would just be still and relax, right? Just not say anything. And I noticed for the times that I practiced that, the whole court hearing period would be much smoother, much kinder, much nicer, less tension, less drama. So I told Rodney, well, are you trying to say that I'm the one that was causing all the problems? As soon as Tuareg stops talking and everything is all good, something's wrong with that. I'm not going down that road. There's got to be something wrong with the other guy. And he said that if you take the time to pause a moment, then you can relax and your attitude, your view in the moment shifts. It doesn't have anything to do with who's good, who's bad, whether they're nicer or I'm nicer. That is sort of the wrong view. That's how we never get to a pause. It's because we're so busy trying to insist that we're right, that I've done it right, and the way I'm doing is the good way to do it, the best way to do it, and if you correct yourself, we won't have any tension. But what he was suggesting is that if you pause, what you bring into the moment is a shift in view, the ability to shift your view. Not even whether your view was right or wrong or good or bad, just this capacity to shift your view exists in that moment. And once one view is shifted, the whole energy in the room changes. And so I begin to realize that practicing this pause, this waiting a minute, is a great opportunity to help me relax. And so Greg Kramer, who created Insight Dialogue, he has a great way of explaining how to bring pause into your life. And so I have three quotes, but one of them is, waking up from habit mind, that's the way I would go into a courtroom, my habit mind, waking up from habit mind is the first step on the path. As such, the first instruction in Insight Dialogue is pause. To pause is to stop some activity temporarily, to just let it go. The pause is meant to help us dwell a moment with our immediate experience as it is. So just a moment, you take a moment and you pause. Now these three things we're going to talk about, the pausing, we're going to talk about practicing mindfulness and practicing acceptance. So the relax, observe, and allow is not something you do sequentially. It's something you do in that immediate moment. So at the moment you pause, at the moment you relax, mindfulness is available to you and acceptance is available to you. So even though I'm talking about them as three separate elements, it's in that first moment of being willing to pause, being willing to relax, being willing to stop a moment, a second. We're not even talking about having to take 30 minutes and let me get myself together. It's not even that, because the mind is so quick with its ability to learn. It's only in the habitual practicing of pausing, just stopping, taking a moment, that you begin to teach the mind how to relax. So even when I began to learn about the tension, started noticing the tension, some things also begin to tap at me to help me see I need to relax. Like, I knew I was upbeat, but I mean, just stop, relax, kind of relax. And I went to a chiropractor one time. My back went out. This was back in 2006. I went to a chiropractor. I'm laying on the table, just getting my body all. And she goes, "Excuse me, do you breathe?" I think I am. I'm alive. So I would think so. She goes, I got to tell you, Tori, man, I can't even feel your body breathing. Like, right, so she's trying to tell me you are going to have to take some deeper breaths in here. So these are these little taps that we have in life. Or because I found out my alignment was off between ankles, hips, and knees, I went through all this massage on the legs to try to get my alignment more aligned. And the therapist would say, your legs are like steel. I can't, you gotta loosen them up some. So you see, I'm getting these little taps that says, there's something here, Tori, that you have to see. This is the only way we see where the tension, where the difficulties are in life, because we won't just naturally see it. We just live our lives the way it is, and the only time we notice something needs to be done is when some big gross thing happens to us, and then we're all in a tizzy. But it is a much subtler window when you start practicing. There are these little things that tap, tap, tap tell you. And one way to begin to see those tap, tap, taps is by pausing. Just all throughout the day, take a moment to pause. Another way to practice sort of connecting to the body. Well, let me just give you this other quote by Greg first. He said, it takes energy to interrupt this habitual push of the mind's reactivity. The energy needed is called right effort. The intention to calm down and wake up. Even with strong intention, though, we must have a way of working with the habits of the heart-mind. We need a gentle guidance and a practice. As such, when we get lost in emotions or fabrications of the mind, we can pause and become mindful of what's happening in the body and the mind. So in some respects, if you're going to practice with pause, if you're going to practice with patience and learn to relax, you'll need to put a pause in there, and it's going to show you when you're not relaxed. It's not going to show you that you're relaxed and everything's cool and everything's good. It's going to show you where the tension is. And so when I started noticing all this tension and people are telling me something's wrong, and I'm noticing it, then there's this nature of patience, which is the choice that we have. I can just learn to be with this tension and not get afraid of it, and just begin to investigate it and learn to see it. And eventually, over time, it begin to relax. I mean, I think I walked around with my shoulders hunched up like this all the time. I don't feel like that now, but it didn't even feel like that then, but I think it was. And so now, I have spent time feeling my shoulders up high so I can learn how they feel when they're not up high. I have taken time feeling into my legs when someone says, oh, they're all tense, or my stomach when it's all tight. I felt that, and I can also feel when it's not there. So that subtle beginning to relax the body, taking this body and our tense way of dragging it around serious, begins to help us bring a bit of relaxation into the body. And when we begin to relax, then we can turn towards the other two aspects. Some other things like mindful movement, Qigong, yoga. I mean, to me, yoga's pretty tense, but Qigong is on the easier side for me. But some people, I mean, they really relax with yoga. And so Qigong, yoga, or even if you don't want to do any of that kind of movements, just doing a body scan right before you sit, or every time you sit, just being willing to go through that body methodically and just notice, is there tension there, is there not? Is there tension? If you turn your attention to your shoulders, do they automatically just relax? Does the body just relax when you begin to turn your attention towards it? Getting massages, or even working on secular ways of relaxation tactics, techniques, all those things you're doing to relax the body from this place of intention that I'm going to relax the body. And pause periodically, notice what the body's doing, notice how the body's feeling. In this noticing, we go to observe. You're pausing or relaxing, and then you're observing. That observing is what we would call mindfulness. That's our mindfulness right there, that ability to begin to turn to look at what's actually happening instead of just moving through the world. So basically, the more patience we gather, the more patience we get, the more continuous our mindfulness becomes. The more I am certain that I move through the world with more mindfulness now than I did 10 years ago. Just being able to be with whatever. It really comes from that ability to see both the stuff I don't like and the stuff that I do like, and hold both of those equally without a lot of judgment on it. So this last quote from Greg is mindfulness that arising, mindfulness that arises from pausing connects us to passing phenomena, the rising and passing away of sensation, thought, and moods, pleasant and unpleasant experience. We may suddenly notice that we are not in fact these phenomena. So we may suddenly notice that we are not in fact these phenomena. Through practice, we develop an agility at becoming aware of such phenomena without identifying with it. This understanding is as pivotal to our freedom as pause is in creating mindfulness. So basically what I think Rodney was pointing to when he would say relax, observe, and allow, is that as we begin to put in place some things that will cause us to begin to relax, once you take that moment, you are paying attention. You can pay attention to whatever's there. And the more we learn to pay attention to whatever's there and watch its natural arising and passing away aspect, we become less and less and less identified with it. And when we're less and less and less identified with it, we're less thrown off and tense when we see something we don't like, and always trying to ignore that and lean into stuff that we do like. You can see that this pausing and observing, this relaxing and allowing, increases our ability to be patient simply because we are less likely to try to hurry up and get past something we don't like. Mostly, I learned to see this kind of seeing. I kind of learned it at retreats. But I think that seeing at retreats, learning to see at retreats, is a little bit of a problem. And I'm probably assuming that you have the same problem I had for a long, long time, is that I would go to a retreat. That retreat environment is all set up, it's very minimal, it's very structured, and it's set up for me to see, because it takes away all the possibility of distraction. I mean, we can look for distraction. We were talking about how you go to Cloud Mountain and they have a little bulletin board when you first come in. I think I've read everything on that bulletin board about 9,000 times. It doesn't even matter if I've already read it before. I need to read something. So reading. So there is a way for the mind to get distracted, but by and large, the main distracting things of home are taken away. So we go into this environment that is highly structured, prepared, and we learn to see. And we see, and we see, and we see, and we see. And then we're like, oh, I see. And it's great, right? But then trying to get out of the parking lot, it's all gone. By the time we get on I-5, we're back to the same old, well, okay, maybe not you guys. Some of you guys might drive really good, but you're back to the energy of, I gotta go fast. So what you're trying to do is it possible to observe and see the quality of that seeing in your everyday life? Do you have to go all the way to Cloud Mountain, Spirit Rock, or IMS to learn how to see? Because that seeing is great, but it does not help us. It doesn't help us when we come home and we're caught in all this distraction. It's good to learn to see, so I'm not saying that retreats aren't good. I've gone to tons of them. But it's not depending on a retreat for us to learn to see, that idea that, oh my God, I'm so much, I need patience, so I gotta go to a retreat so I can find some patience. Instead, we wanna learn to see here. And there's a famous story, a sutta, that I'm not going to read the sutta, but I just want to talk about this guy because I think he's so he's special. His name is Bahiya. I don't know if you guys know the story of Bahiya, but Bahiya was this guy. He reminds me of myself. He thought he was enlightened. People thought he was enlightened, you know. He would walk around, he would do his practice, and everybody would say, oh, Bahiya, you are really enlightened. And he thought he was. So he was sitting in meditation, and he just sort of spoke out into the energy that says, you know, I must be an arhant. Am I an arhant? Is that what I am? Am I totally enlightened? Is this enlightenment? And of course, some deva who's feeling sorry for Bahiya says, no. I have to tell you what the deva said to Bahiya, because it's quite direct. The deva said that, come on, where are you going to find it? You, Bahiya, are neither an arahant, nor have you entered the path of arahantship. You don't even have the practice whereby you would become an arahant or enter the path of arahantship. You are so far off the mark. You need to give up now or go get some instructions because you are over the top. And so Bahiya, he gets a little thrown by this, but bless his soul, he is determined. So he wants to find out where does he have to go, and ultimately they point him to the Buddha. And so he finds the Buddha right when the Buddha is going into alms round. And he runs to the Buddha like this urgency and says, I gotta know, give it to me quick. What do I need to do to get enlightened? And he did, no. And the Buddha's like, Bahiya, we're getting ready to go into alms rounds. And wait, they say that when he saw the Buddha, I first have to tell you what he says when the Buddha approached. He goes, he saw the Buddha, who was serene and inspiringly serene, confident, calming, his senses at peace, mind at peace, having attained the utmost tranquility and poise, tamed, guarded, and restrained. This is the man that walks in front of Bahiya, and Bahiya is like, excuse me, sir, excuse me, sir, can you just tell me how you did all that real quick? So the Buddha says, this is not the time, Bahiya, you gotta wait. We're getting ready to go into alms rounds and we need the time. And Bahiya's like, but sir, I'm sorry, you don't know what dangers lie ahead. It could very well be that there's some danger out there that I wouldn't know. So if you would tell me really quick, what do I need to know? I'll get out of your hair, you know, I'll be gone. So the Buddha says that he basically asked the Buddha this three times. And the first couple of times, Buddha's like, Bahiya, now is not the time. Just take a moment. But since he was persistent, the Buddha said, okay, I'm going to give it to you quick in a nutshell. When you see, just see. When you hear, well, let me just read it the way the Buddha said it. This is the way he said you should train yourself. In reference to the seen, there will only be the seen. So when you see, just see. In reference to the heard, only the heard. So when you hear, just hear. In references to the senses, only the senses. So when you smell something, taste something, touch something, just do that. And in reference to the cognized, only cognize. So he says that this is how you should train. This is how you should train yourself. When for you, there will only be the seen, the heard, or the sensed, or the cognized, then bahiya, there is no connection to you with that. When there is no you in connection with that, there is no you there. When there is no you there, you are neither here nor yonder nor between. So this is what you need to do to end your stress. And basically what he's saying is, if you just see, if we just take a moment and just notice what's happening, feel what's happening, sense what's happening, and experience what's happening, whatever it is, you have disconnected your ego, your you, your sense of self in the moment. And that's what I did when I would go into the courthouse and I would just be there. I took the tuareg and what my agenda was and what I needed to do, I took it out of the space so that it was just me and someone else, or just a moment in time. And I was able to hear whatever people had to say, and they in turn could hear whatever I could say. So basically, Bahiya, he takes this, and that's basically what the Buddha's saying. I think that's what Rodney was trying to say when he would use his observe. He's saying, just be with whatever's there. Notice throughout the day that you're actually seeing. Instead of just looking at everything going about, take a moment and shift the view to realizing, oh, scene's happening here. Or shift the view and notice, huh, I'm hearing. It's not so much what you're hearing, but the fact that you're hearing. Or notice that you feel yourself sense something in the chair, or there's a taste going on when you're eating. It's noticing the sense door instead of being caught in whatever it is that you're doing at the time. So that shifting to observing is what creates this kind of patience that comes along. It's a good thing that Buddha, that Bahiya really stuck with the Buddha, because actually, after he left the Buddha, sad as it is, for those of you that don't know, he died. He got trampled by some cow, and he died. And so that learning that Buddha gave him was, they say that he was enlightened before he died. That all he really needed was that energy. But in some respects, if you really want to begin to see the path, then we almost have to ask ourselves, challenge ourselves on everything that we're doing to see whether or not we're living like Bahiya in this idea that, yes, I'm going on towards our headship. Or, you know, begin to see whether we're completely off the path. And that seeing comes from beginning to shift periodically and noticing that you're seeing. Noticing that you're actually seeing me, or noticing that you're actually sensing the chair, or hearing the train go by every time it goes by. You hear that, and that there's a hearing going on. You're not making that hearing happen, or that seeing happen, or that sensing into the chair. It's just happening. Now, there is one thing here. That's the easy way. Because we could go on meditations, we could practice long meditations, we could go on retreats, I mean, we could show up at Sims. But that Bahiya's way, I think, is the quick and dirty. Just, you know, do that. And you don't have to go any further. And I like the way Trungpa Rinpoche says this. He says, my advice to you is not to undertake the spiritual path. It's too difficult, too long, and too demanding. I suggest you ask for your money back and go home. This is not a picnic. It is really going to ask everything of you. So it is best not to begin. However, if you do begin, and of course, everybody in this room has begun, it is best to finish. So basically, it's sort of this. And Capitol Hill, we're talking about how to utilize a practice in our everyday life. But that's what this is. This is learning how to use the practice in whatever way will help you notice some stuff. And if you're walking around in this idea like Bahia, like, oh, I'm doing good, practice is good, everything's going okay, we're moving along smoothly, that is Bahia's energy. That is that idea that something is askew, because in reality, it's pretty arduous, it's pretty difficult, and you see a lot of things you don't want to see. But that's the point, that it's almost like if you're not seeing stuff you don't want to see, then you're not really seeing, you're not really hearing. Pema Chodron said that the next time you lose heart, you can't bear to experience what you've been feeling, you might recall this instruction. Change the way you see it and lean in. Instead of blaming our discomfort on outer circumstances or on our own weaknesses, we can choose to stay present and wake up to our experience, not rejecting it, not grasping it, not burying the stories that we relentlessly tell ourselves. This is priceless advice that addresses the true cause of suffering, yours, mine, and that of all living beings. So basically, the way I see this is, it's you know, sometimes I think maybe I'm a little bit too on the edge all the time. I should probably practice a little bit more relaxing and let's take our time and do whatever. But I always practice like on the urgency, like we're about to fall off the cliff, so let's get with it. I can't help that. That nature, that is the way I see practice, like Bahia. We do not know what is going to happen to us when we walk out that door. So at any given moment, the time for us to practice is in that moment. It isn't like we're going to get to it at some point. So taking the time to notice how tense we are, taking the time to observe a moment, just to see what's going on, just to notice that we have this energy going on. And then the last part is the allowing, the accepting, whatever it is, without a lot of pushback against it. I would say that most of our emotions are limited view. So we all have different intense emotions that bother us, and most of you know mine's anger. The one thing I learned about anger is that it's such a limited view that there's so much stuff that I have to not see in order for me to be angry at someone. Something happens and all my energy points towards one person or one situation, and there's all that anger pointed at that. But to do that, I can't see a whole bunch of stuff. A whole bunch of stuff that I'm doing, a whole bunch of stuff in the nature of conditions around it. There's a whole bunch of things that come into play when something happens. But I cannot see that. I can't even look at it if I'm going to be angry. Because the more I begin to take in information, broaden the view, see more, hear more, notice more, less anger there is. Less and less and less and less. Because I'm taking in more information. So part of this ability to allow and to accept is in the seeing things as they really are, meaning that we have to take in more information than the limited amount of information we want to take in whenever we get trapped in some of our intense emotions. I watched this documentary the other night. Oh my God, I watched this documentary about the state of the world and it was so terrifying. Even when I was watching the documentary, I kept saying, don't watch this, Tawari. You don't want to hear this. And I'm watching, I'm like, oh my God, it's so sad. I'm so mad. And so afterwards, I took this walk, and I'm walking around the neighborhood, and the weather was nice and peaceful, and just everybody was moving about in a peaceful kind of way. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, I'm very peaceful here. I love my life. There's all this good stuff happening. So I was noticing the documentary. I'm noticing the way I'm living right now. I'm right here. I'm not having all the problems that was in that documentary. So which is it? Is it the documentary, the or the peaceful place I'm living in right now? Which is it? And in this course of walking, I realized that they are both happening simultaneously, that I am both in a peaceful place and the world is in major chaos and there is a lot of pain going on at the same time. The problem I find is that the mind tends not to want to listen to that painful stuff. It doesn't want to hear it. It doesn't want to deal with it. It wants to zero in on just this little narrow window and figure out a way that I cannot hear, I cannot feel that uncomfortableness. But this is what happens to us when we don't look at the difficult. We cannot experience the Brahmaviharas. The Brahmaviharas, meaning the four heart energies. We can't experience it because they're designed to support us in difficulty. We can't really experience kindness because we get too closed off from the rest of the world. We can't really experience it. And I was preventing myself from experiencing compassion by not wanting to see this difficulty of this documentary. So after I did my walk, I went home. I have now this sense of peacefulness, and I sat there and watched that documentary from a place of compassion. And it's a completely different experience. It's almost like you have to try practice like this. If there's something that's very difficult for you, can you find some access to peace and then go back to it again and see if you can experience it from that place of peace rather than from just seeing it one way, and that means I have to cut it off. Anyway, these are just some examples of how we can practice with patience. It is in that willingness to relax the body, to just allow ourselves to notice, see, observe, hear what's actually happening, noticing the energy that's going on, whatever's arising is fine. And then being willing to accept everything, not just a portion of it, but everything. So if it's too tight, find something that's going to support you in being more relaxed and peaceful, and then take that into this part that's tight and difficult. So you don't just, so you're not just stuck in difficult or peacefulness, because life really isn't all this or all that. We can carry some of our practice skillfulness and our practice peacefulness into some of these difficult times and difficult moments and actually bear it in a way that we couldn't if we didn't have the practice. So I think I'll leave you with this Tara Brach quote. She says, clearly recognizing what is happening inside us and regarding what we see with an open, kind, and loving heart is what I call radical acceptance. If we are holding back from any part of our experience, any part, if our heart shuts out any part of who we are and what we feel, we are fueling the fears and feelings of separation that sustain the trance of unworthiness. Radical acceptance directly dismantles the very foundation of this trance. And so, what she says is, clearly recognize what is happening inside us. And regarding what we see, or notice, or feel with an open and kind and loving heart. That's what we do. That's how we're going to get the patience. We're going to relax, observe, and just allow. So we'll stop there. So if anybody has any questions, we can take some time for that. You notice I'm patiently waiting. Yeah.
So the last piece that you said about the documentary really resonated, because I've been noticing myself over the last 2 days with the woman who was killed on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like not wanting to look at it, because if I look at it, like last July, I just went into kind of a tailspin of paralysis and agitation and grief and everything, and so I can feel myself, I don't want to go there, because if I go there, then I will get kind of, I will lack patience. And so what you said about finding a place of peace and then coming back to it,
yeah,
is very helpful. And then I guess sort of building on that, you know, how do we look at patience in the context of maybe when it is right to take action to try to alleviate some of the conditions that are causing suffering in the world, or that feel like they're not skillful.
So the question is, so first there's a comment about the tension that was arising in her about the woman that got shot by the police recently, and not being able to look at that because it's so difficult, and then all this anger arises, and so she was just making a comment about trying that out, like trying this idea of going and finding practice and bringing that into the situation, giving us some space to actually look at it instead of just pushing it away and not seeing it. And then it seems like there's a second part, which is, how do we bring patience into this sense of all the stuff that's going on around us? And I think the two are they're different. So the first part of this is there's no difference between our inability to look at troubling things about the world. Doesn't have to be the police shooting, it could be the environment. I mean, there's a lot of scary stuff happening just constantly around us. But part of the problem is not just the scariness about what's happening to the environment or the anger about what's happening in a police shooting. It is anger, period. It's fear, period. Sadness, period. If we don't get comfortable with feelings and emotions like sadness, fear, anger, worry, disappointment, if we don't get comfortable with these feelings, we can't look at anything. We can't look at that. We can't look at it on a video, and we can't look at it in our own lives. And so what we're really trying to do is begin to get comfortable with that. So bringing in a sense of peace and going back and looking at it is what helps you, or helps all of us, begin to realize compassion is there for us to be able to hold some of these difficulties. Because this is not the first time that the world has been in a mess. I mean, anybody that knows anything about history, I get terrified when I think about the Dark Ages. Why do you think we call them the Dark Ages? They're pretty terrifying things. And so when I think about, I was not living during World War, I was born during World War II, I think, But no, I was not born during World War II. I was not living during World War II, but I have lived with people who lived through World War II, and just watching the way they act in relation to that time is scary. It's scary as hell. So there's all this stuff that went on around the world all through life, all through generations of being human, that is scary. But fear is fear is fear is fear. So if you're afraid to look at a bill, or if you're afraid to go to the doctor's office because I feel something and I don't want to find out what it is, there's no difference between that fear and the fear that is connected to what are we doing to the environment. There's no difference than the anger that I had with my childhood and the anger I had at George Bush. It was all the same. It's all the same anger. And beginning to work with it, you don't have to take the video. You can take anything that angers you or troubles you and begin to look at that. Bring some peace into it. Right, that's the second part. So this is the second part of what are we going to do with this energy after we have it, right? The second part points towards the doing. And I can't remember, somebody gave me a quote about a butterfly saying, "I just do what I can." Right? At some point, we have to come to terms with that. We live in a world where all this information comes in on us. I'm not saying don't do anything, just be okay with that. I mean, I guess if you don't do anything, then be okay with that. Just be in a world where you're going to accept, I'm not going to do anything. But it's sort of like I begin to realize that I could go into prison and help a lot of people in prison, but I wouldn't say the environment is my issue. There are things out there that really, really trigger me. And sometimes the environment, like when I see a documentary, will scare the death out of me. But I wouldn't say, I have friends that they are not going into prison, but they are talking about the environment all the time. The point is, I feel like for me, you have to get in the game. In some way, there's plenty of things going on that are troubling. You may not be able, in fact, you won't be able to solve all the issues out there. But we have to get in the game. You have to find a way to do something that supports your ability to be responsive to the pain and suffering that's out there. And one of the ways to begin to be responsive to the pain and suffering that's out there is to connect with compassion. If it's about fear and afraid and a force and I better do something because it's all terrible, it doesn't work like that. You don't necessarily bring the gift of kindness when you come. I mean, because we all know some people that are really strong activists, kindness would not be the word I would associate with them. You know, it's that adjective. We want to be kind, but that's not what we're actually doing. And so whatever it takes for us to get whatever area of difficulty in the world that's out there that supports your ability to be kind and supportive in that area, do that. Because we cannot change other people's behaviors. And all we can do is support one another and hope that there's a movement towards kindness. That's what I think is happening. But I think we're so caught off guard by all the negativity, we don't notice the movement towards kindness as much as it is. And so it's just learning to be with our everyday emotions so that when something happens, you have the capacity to go back and look at it. That's what I think it is. I just don't think anyone in this room is going to solve everything that's going on. If they are, I'd like to be with you. You know, I want to attach myself to you. So together we could go out there and fix everything. It's not like that. But somehow or another, consciousness and kindness and this constant consciousness and kindness in the face of all this is unbelievable. In fact, Since I've spent so much time talking about this, let me just share one thing. I don't know if you guys heard this guy after the tower in London had that big fire and so many people died. And basically, I think nobody wanted to go in that area. And the media was there the next day, and this guy came. And he was with some friends, and he's walking around, and he's there, and he's upbeat. And so she went to him, and she started talking to him, asking him, "What are you doing here? What? Aren't you scared?" And it was the way he said it. So I'm paraphrasing him, and I can't remember exactly what he said. But it was this energy that said, if this is all about being mad because I'm looking at boys and I'm looking at girls and we're having a great time and we're drinking and we're partying, and that troubles someone else, that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to keep doing that over and over and over. If it means I'm going to have a good time, then I would never let someone take that away from me, take away from me the ability to have a good time, just because they don't like it. And so in some respects, that's what we have to do. We have to find a way to enjoy life, be with life, accept life in the midst of difficulty, and don't run away from it. So it's both of them. You see, that's the only way I can see it, is find that kind of energy. Whatever that's gonna take, that's where I wanna go. That's how I wanna be. I think that's patience. Even if the Buddha, with his patience, when I think of him, I don't think, oh, he was like a non-activist, didn't help nobody, just sort of out there. I don't think of him that way. And yet he lived at a time when many people he spoke to were treated like subhuman. He walked around with millions of Dalit people being treated with the worst of conditions. And yet, he's patient, in the game, walking around, ardent, still. So, I don't think he was walking around saying, what can I do to fix all this? He was walking around, and he did not turn away from people who were brutalized and mistreated and left out and harmed. He didn't turn away from it. He just got in the game and just walked around people who were having difficulties and talked about how to hold these difficulties and still open the mind to something different, something other than that. So that's what I think is our greatest task, is doing that and not getting swallowed up by all that negativity, nor running away from it. So let's see if there's another question out there. Waiting patiently. Okay, maybe I'm not being patient. Maybe I am being a little like waiting. Actually, if we're done, Tim has some announcements, so we can. Do you have a question? Okay.
It's more of a comment. I just realized when you were talking that me making a big fuss about something like the environment is actually an avoidance.
There you go.
It's really pulling back from it. If I say, this is in my world, this, and accept it, then I have the responsibility of making a choice of doing something about it or not, and realizing that I can't always do something about it. But if I say, oh my God, this is in my world, I can't stand it, that's just making a fuss without really doing anything.
That's right.
And it's really when I just can say, accept, this is in my world, then I can choose to act or not, and that's where real action comes.
Yes, it's very beautiful. So what she said was that she's realizing, it's just a comment, that when she gets all angry and frustrated about the environmental issues in the world, that she's really just deflecting and not being with what's actually going on for her. Instead, I mean, I wish I could say it as beautifully as you did, Barbara, but it's this... when she's able to accept this is just what's happening in the world, she can then come to a place of making a choice between doing what I can, doing something, not doing something. And either way, she's just sort of coming to this, what Tara Brach would say, this radical acceptance of the way things are right now. It has come to be this way. And do what we can in that moment. That anything else is pushing against it. It is the aversion or the grasping of wishing it was not this way. And it is. I mean, what is it? Did they say Death Valley was 127? That's a little scary here. And even the weather says it's extreme conditions for a desert. That's a little scary. So, but this is the world we're in. And I don't think all of our pushing and screaming and all of the angst that we have about it is what's going to carry us into being able to deal with it. It's not to say that the pushing and screaming and angst is bad. It's just saying that if you don't do all that screaming and pushing and angsting, it does not mean you're not doing anything. That in some respects, being able to accept what is as it is a far more, is a far greater capacity to do something in response out of the heart rather than just creating more harm. So I'm not sure how that shows up all the time. I can tell you, because sometimes I wish I could just stop some things and change some things and fix something. But it's not being upset that we get that way either. It's just recognizing that it's a limited view. And that if we want a broader view, we're going to have to open up to some more information, bring in some more information to help us see more clearly what's actually happening. Be with it. You know, in a way that supports us. Okay, so next week, we are going to talk about the implications of all this and talk a little bit, have a discussion about, we'll talk a little summary about this, but the implications of what this all means. And then have a discussion. All right? We do have some announcements, though. Tim?